welcome to this week's edition of A Degree of Interest with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Dr. Rachel O'Connell. Now, that's not a very Maltese name.
No, definitely not. It's a very Irish name, in fact.
So, and what's your doctor in?
So I'm, my doctorate is in forensics mm-hmm. psychology, and so my PhD was analysing paedophile activity on the internet and looking at the implications for investigative strategies. So it's kind of digital forensics, but also understanding the psychology mm-hmm. of the people that you're investigating.
Wow, that's quite a heavy subject.
Smidge heavy, yes.
Okay, and do you still study now? Is that something that's an ongoing process for you?
My aim is to, I'm currently running a technology company, and my aim is once we scale this and sell the business, my ambition is to do another PhD.
Okay.
loving academia.
Yes.
I love the whole research process and looking at the transformation that technology can bring about to society, both positive and negative.
Okay, so you'd be a double doctor.
I'd be a double doctor. That'd be nice. Sorry,
is that what they call you when you've got two PhDs? Yeah, or is
yeah.
it?
Does, yeah.
But you actually lecture as well. You've been to other universities and you've lectured yourself. So what's that like, and what kinds of things do you lecture in? Do you go in the same subject?
Yes, I absolutely love teaching. I think it's a huge honor and a privilege. And once you're lecturing, be it to like 400 first year students or whatever, that kind of magic moment you get when you see people's eyes are focused and they're absorbing what you're saying and stuff. And I think that there's nothing more exciting than that, to have people join you on a journey about acquiring new knowledge about things and looking at things in a different way. So it's a fantastic buzz. And then tutorials and seminars with smaller groups of people, you get more of an opportunity to listen to what other people's thoughts are and try and get that group dynamic going to have some discussions about things. I love that as well.
And I guess your subject being online paedophile activity, and now through your company Trust Elevate, that's growing. That problem must be growing.
It's an exponential rise in child sexual abuse material online. And what we're seeing is that kids are going onto sites like TikTok and they're live streaming, and Youbo is another one. And the kids are going on innocently wanting to like dance. So they're live streaming. They've got the phone set up and they're doing a little dance. And then other people can make comments to them and suggestive things like going from lick your lips to various other instructions to the mm-hmm. kids, which ends up producing this content. So there's a huge opportunity for businesses to behave responsibly and to age check people. Like Trust Elevate is a child age verification parental consent provider. Our whole mission is to create a safer internet for children and young people. And if platforms knew the ages of their users, then of course they could create safer spaces.
And this must be something, so when you did your PhD,
yeah.
which, no offence, was a while ago.
It was a while ago.
And the internet was quite new.
Yes, it was very new.
And then there would have been changes, you know, there would have been mm-hmm. emails that then you could have emails that people couldn't find. But now, like you're saying, there's TikTok and Youbo.
Yes, it's Youbo's called the Tinder for teens. I mean, that is
okay.
wrong on so many levels.
Yeah. So these are things that you're, so when you're a lecturer as well, your knowledge doesn't stop. It's not like you're talking about ancient history that is ancient history.
Right,
you know,
right.
They don't often find a new thing.
Yeah.
You must have to keep being at school. You
Absolutely.
Must have to keep learning.
100%. So when I did my PhD at University College Cork, I was doing some lecturing then as PhD students. That's what we do to keep things going. And then I moved to the University of Central Lancashire, which is up in the north of England.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some funding from the European Commission to set up a cyberspace research unit. And it was the first internet safety. Like in Malta, you've got an internet safety center.
Okay.
It's funded by the European Commission. So my research unit was funded by the European Commission. So we had an interface directly with industry.
Okay.
Right? So as new technologies and new product features and AI was beginning to be rolled out, our research was focused on that. So we were entirely always future focused, right? And horizon scanning. And I think that makes life a bit more interesting, because you've got your finger on the pulse the whole time.
That's it, because it must be awful. You're doing your studies, you know, 3-4 year degree. You come out and what you've learned, it can't be out of date. You have to be absolutely on the button.
Absolutely.
And especially for something so important. you really have to know the latest technologies and the latest strategies. It makes my skin. Sorry. I thought this was going to be fun. So you're talking about the interface with industry as well.
Yeah.
So is that common in universities?
I think more and more universities, particularly, there's a very active here in the University of Malta, the computer science department, looking at how to upskill students so that they understand cybersecurity, what the companies are looking for. Mm-hmm. And also I've been doing a lot of work with Professor Gordon Patch and Mark Milichev.
McAuliffe. I taught a PhD. So Mark McAuliffe, yes, I know.
And one of the things that Trust Elevate is doing is building a child rights impact assessment, right? So companies, when they're handling a whole load of data, have to do a data protection impact assessment. So what we're developing is a child rights impact assessment. So we're saying, okay, if you're a product developer and you're like, whoa, I'm creating this really cool product, and the commercial team are looking and thinking how many ads they can put on that, right, and how much money they can make from it. What we're developing is a set of decision trees so that a product developer is saying, right, if I'm relying on this AI, this machine, informed by this machine learning, I'm tapping into the psychographic profiles we've created about our users, what are the risks and potential harms associated with that for kids in different age bands, right? So we will calibrate that so that as a product developer, you'll just basically tick a set of boxes and you realize, oh, actually, that's very risky to kids in that age band.
There's a vulnerability.
Right? So working with Gordon and Mark here at University of Malta, it's like, how do we integrate that into the teaching program, mm-hmm. and the curriculum for computer science engineers
and upcoming product developers,
right?
And designers.
Right. So that's one of the really interesting things about working with universities, is kind of influencing the curriculum and the exams, and then equipping people with the knowledge and skills that they'll need in their future roles. Because as we're seeing more and more AI, there's a reliance on that in industry. We're seeing more and more questions about data ethics and philosophy. So areas like philosophy may not be something that you think in your head is closely associated with computer science, mm-hmm. but increasingly it is,
okay.
right? We're having to think about, so companies track you as you travel across the internet and create what are called psychographic profiles. And these can be between 8,000 and 17,000, you know, however long you've been online, data points.
Wow.
Right? About you, your personality, your socioeconomic background, your gender, your relationship. They probably know if your relationship is going to break up before you do. Your mental state, what drugs you've taken, what shopping you do, how much alcohol you consume. Like, pretty much everything about
okay.
you. Right?
And that's because we load. We tell everybody everything we do. We show you what we eat. We show you our cocktail pictures. We show you what we've just bought. Yeah,
and also it's the surveillance, it's corporate surveillance that's allowed. So when you see those cookie, what seem like annoying, you know, do you accept these cookies?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just go, oh yeah, whatever, accept all. Mm-hmm. But if you open that up to see how many data processors are processing your data, mm-hmm. and for what purposes, you'd very quickly change into being a person like me, which is reject all. And then checking if they've got sneakily tried to put in a legitimate interest, right? Because sometimes in these cookie banners, you say reject all, but you'll notice there's one green little highlighted area, which is legitimate interest, which is the other legal basis for processing your data. And if you don't say no to that, they gather that data.
Okay.
So what we're seeing is a data economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people describe the internet in terms of the data economy, which is just what I said, that whole load of data that's been gathered, and also the attention economy. So when you're on TikTok or whatever, or Instagram, and you're endlessly scrolling, there's no stop. It doesn't end, right? The purpose is to keep your eyeballs on the screen so they can show you more ads.
I wish they'd done like TikTok when I was young, but for things like physics and biology and, you know, the subjects I struggled with.
Right.
And then if you were watching it on Instagram or social media, you might have remembered or screenshotted something that was interesting.
Absolutely. There's a fantastic website out there, the Khan Academy, K-H-A-N.
Okay.
Which is absolutely brilliant. So, you know, the way you're taught maths and mathematics in school and there's like a set way of doing it. Mm. Khan Academy says, actually, there's up to 9 different ways of solving a reasonably complex is maths. And it actually makes it really interesting. So if there are any parents out there listening or
struggling with maths across to the kids,
the Khan Academy is really, really good.
Hmm.
And there is a fantastic guy on Instagram as well who does teach people about mathematics in a really exciting way.
Okay.
Right? So those are out there.
I've got a fun guy who teaches me Italian grammar on Instagram.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a stalker of his, actually. Because I always want to sort of impress my friends in Italy when I sort of say something that they think, oh, you must really speak Italian well to use that, you know, version of the verb. So no, I quite like that. But no, back to all seriousness, it's a constantly evolving process. What are the trends that you're seeing emerging now that are things that, you know, students, other lecturers and things need to be aware of in terms of the next thing in technology that you'll be lecturing about in a minute?
Well, we're looking at the metaverse and
what's the metaverse?
Mark Zuckerberg's it's like Second Life. You are an avatar in an environment, mm-hmm. You wear your Oculus VR lenses, so it feels like, so we wouldn't actually have to be in the same room together.
We've just done COVID. Do we want to do this? I mean,
I know it's but it can make the idea is that it can make things very exciting and it can be very facilitating. And so you're using technology affordances in a positive way. However, right? They're also, in addition to learning platforms within the metaverse, there are strip clubs and there's adult content and there are adults with a sexual interest in children who are trying to make contact with them.
Ah, okay.
Right? So what Meta or Facebook is doing is trying to steam ahead to the next evolution and VR and AR, augmented reality and virtual reality, and creating this metaverse without having sorted out the problems that we know exist right
already
now,
yeah,
right?
So that's kids seeing stuff they shouldn't see because they pretend to be older. 17 or nobody even asks them. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And they end up being traumatized by these things. And also new social norms are created. So a lot of parents aren't aware, for example, that it is normal. I'm doing inverted commas. It's perceived as normal by children to receive naked pictures of genitalia and to be asked for those.
Yeah.
Right? So this universe, which may not be as readily accessible or just parents just don't know about it, is shaping social norms. So there is a very real push at the moment amongst lawmakers to say, whoa, steady on there. Let's just create a safe space, right?
So really what you're doing, although you have a technology company, do you lecture only technology students or do you go to like the social services and things like that? Because this kind of touches a whole load of bases. This touches retail. This touches, you know, streaming. This touches social media. This touches fun stuff.
Yes, yes.
But then obviously scary stuff, you know, relationships, parents. Oh, yeah. So where do you lecture and who do you lecture?
So I go to universities. I was invited to Oxford University to give a lecture there, to the Oxford Internet Institute. But then I'm also invited to speak at various conferences and on podcasts. Like I did a podcast the other day with EY about their data governance, right? And with Consult Hyperion, which is focused on fintechs and banks.
All right.
How do you handle kids' data in
of course, kids and banking.
Right. To various conferences. I'm the technical author of an identity standard that was published by the British Standards Institution and is becoming a global standard. So when there are conferences about identity and identity verification, and what Trust Elevate has done is developed a way to check children's ages and check when somebody says, hey, I'm the mom of this kid. We do that in a way that's zero data. We don't hold any data.
Okay, so you don't get back into that rat race.
Right.
Okay.
Right, where it's like I'm a privacy and child rights advocate to the core of my being. So the technology has been built, right, with that in mind. So, yeah, as you say, we don't add to the problems. There's enough of them already. So I get to speak at different kinds of events, and it's always exciting. And sometimes I go on TV.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Okay.
So when I was in the UK, I was a government advisor and internet safety expert. So I would be invited onto the BBC Breakfast News sometimes and be interviewed.
And what other sort of TV stuff have you done? Because I think I read in your bio something about Panorama. So that's like a huge program. And Coronation Street, which is another huge program. So how do you, you know, as a doctor in quite a basically horrible subject.
Yes.
How do you get involved with programs like Panorama and Coronation Street?
Well, Coronation Street, the writers rang me and I thought it was a friend taking the mickey. I was just like, yeah, sure, it's Coronation Street. I thought it was my office colleague, Jane. And they were like, no, this is Coronation Street. We want to do a storyline on like...
Of course, and they need an expert advisor.
Right.
Okay, that's why, because I thought... What would she have to do with Coronation Street? But and Panorama?
And Panorama, we're doing a piece on influencers, right?
Okay.
And trying to understand how, so everybody's on TikTok and Instagram. Not everybody, but... Some people on Instagram and TikTok and others are what are called influencers. So they're promoting a brand and or a lifestyle or something. So they produce content on a regular basis. And if you get to have a certain number of followers, then you can generate income from that.
Okay.
Right? So that sounds like, whoa, that's really cool. However, the downside of that is that you have to produce content.
Okay.
And, right? And if you're a young person like PewDiePie, for example, is one massive content guy on YouTube. And he pulled a prank one day using Fiverr, which is this platform where you can get people to do stuff, technology stuff for a really low price.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. And he got these guys to do something that had an anti-Semitic tone to it. Mm. But he hadn't realized that at the time, right? He just thought this was a joke. And he was just absolutely lambasted.
Of course. Uh-huh.
Right, left and center. Yeah. Lost a load of contracts. Now, this is his livelihood.
Yeah.
So that created a huge problem for him. But also, imagine, you know, hundreds of thousands of people saying you're a bad person.
Mm.
Right?
What that must do to you.
That's psychologically draining. So what we're seeing a lot of influencers and content producers is they're suffering burnout. And unfortunately, there have been a number of suicides also. So Panorama is trying to say, yes, it might seem like all glitzy and wonderful, but you need to take into account these sorts of factors and make sure you have a work-life balance. And also, because these young people, they don't have a PR agency. Like if a company makes a misstep, right? There's
somebody's
a comms agency,
up.
PR,
yeah.
And they're like, oh, put this statement out saying we take this very seriously. We didn't.
Yeah.
These are like young people who don't have any of that working. They're doing this from their bedroom, you know, or, right? So Panorama did this really interesting program around that. And then the other thing is that you've got on YouTube influencers who are unboxers. They unbox.
Okay.
Like they get a toy and they unbox, they open the box.
That's right.
It's called unboxing.
That's the thing.
That's the thing.
Okay.
Very important thing. Okay. So some of these kids were, like the youngest guy was 4 when he started, right?
Is that a bit mean of the parents or is that?
Right. So there's a French minister whose name escapes me right now, introduced employment laws to say, right, we need to make sure most parents probably really good intentions, right?
Mm.
But when a parent then gives up a job and that becomes their whole job, which is producing these things, you can get into a little bit of a gray area. And what happens to that child's money? Is it going into a bank account for when they want to go to university or when they want to do whatever with it? So it's given rise to a lot of ethical and societal challenges.
Okay, so this your sort of original PhD is kind of changing, I suppose, or the like I said, it changes through time, because these, I didn't even know about 4-year-old influencers at the end of the day. That's quite scary. If you saw me unpacking a box, you would not want to film it. So I get too excited, you know, when my Zara stuff comes in. But what's next then? How do we? Because it's protecting children from even their own parents in some cases. Mm-hmm. Then quite something to get across.
There are challenges. So what they've done in France is introduced employment laws mm-hmm. around this, right? And I think other countries are taking that on board. And what we need, there's almost like an inflection point now as we are veering into metaverse, and all the brands are like, whoa, dude, let's be on this metaverse. It'll be amazing. And I think there's almost like ethical consumerism needs to come into play, where we as consumers say, hang on a second, how can you prove to me that you've taken at least a modicum of safety checks here? Like, remember in the olden days, I was going to say, when I was a kid, right? And you'd go to a playground at swings and slides, and if you came flying off the swings or the slides, if they were set up in such a way, you could actually come flying off them and do yourself some serious injury. Mm. Remember, elbows, knees,
floods, scars.
Into the hospital, getting x-rayed and stuff. So then health and safety legislation came mm-hmm. in, and they were like, okay, you cannot have a slide at that that angle, which means the kids are going to come bombing down it. And they changed the tarmac to like
that bouncy stuff, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you're still having the buzz of you know, going high on the swing and coming down the slide, but you're not ending up with a broken neck or, mm-hmm. or serious injuries. So it's kind of like, how do we mirror that in the online world? Mm-hmm. How do we ensure that the people... Or another analogy, if you go to like a big amusement park with loads of roller coasters,
yeah,
right? There are roller coasters for smallies, for young children. There's roller coasters for adults, right?
Yeah.
And there are certain health and safety checks that need to be done when the roller coaster is made.
Yep. And
right? And then checks are done during the day in different weather conditions and stuff. And the staff are trained not to let like a six-year-old on an adult's.
Yeah, there's like height restrictions sometimes or whatever.
That wouldn't end up well.
You're going to fall off.
Right? And possibly die. So it's like, how do we make those measures, mm-hmm. those sorts of measures, become a common practice in tech companies? Rather than, you know, this whole thing of invent quickly and break things.
And it's like the same before. It could be also there's retail companies and streaming companies. They push to have the tech to be able to deliver.
Yes.
You know, this experience or this need from their customers, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's an across the board yes. problem that you need to address.
Absolutely. So those brands that are racing into metaverse and stuff, it's really, you know what, you need to think about what the potential negative impact is and your role in it.
Because the children are your future customers.
Exactly.
You know, so they need to be content and understanding what's happening to their data or what's happening to them and their experiences are going to form the next level of developers and PhD students.
Exactly.
There you go.
All these universities. Yes.
Yeah.
And then also for investors who are investing in these companies, there was a big gold rush, like investing in Facebook and others. And it was like, oh, who cares if there's anything negative that's going to happen? You know, I'm just going to make a shed load of money and right off into the sunset. Now, as we're looking at the fabric of society being, you know, genocide in Myanmar, all the disinformation that's happening. I mean, you look at what's happening in the Ukraine at the moment. So you're looking on Twitter or Facebook and you're like, can I actually trust these images? Mm. Right. So we've now seen what the negative impacts are of unbridled innovation and lack of care for negative impacts. So I think increasingly investors are also recognizing they have a role and a responsibility. So we're seeing the growth of ESG investing, which is environment, social and governance.
Okay.
Right. So they're saying to startup companies and indeed scale up companies, hey, what is the impact on right,
ESG,
the environment, social and governance kind of things. So I think there's a little bit of a sea change that's beginning to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? So hopefully that will result in a better internet for everybody.
Let's hope you get to sell Trust Elevate and go on to your next PhD, which will be about, I don't suppose you can tell us really, because someone else might do it. Well, we'll leave it there. That's Dr. Rachel O'Connell. Thank you for joining me on this week's A Degree of Interest. I've been Monique Chambers and I will be again next week.
Thank you.